Alaska can provide a stable source of gas supply to the Asia-Pacific region for more than a century.
Governor Bill Walker makes a gas line pitch to the president of China. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the State House takes a different approach to combining bills by amending the Senate's proposal.
This shows our commitment to a full fiscal plan and not passing just a portion of it and walking away.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Governor Bill Walker hosted an unexpected guest on Friday, the president of China. Xi Jinping was headed back from a meeting with President Donald Trump in Florida. It's not unusual for foreign leaders to refuel in Anchorage, but this wasn't just a pit stop. And experts say there are good reasons for China's top leader to drop in. Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Most of Alaska was astonished when, shortly before 7 p.m. on Friday, the president of China and his wife stepped off a 747 at Ted Stevens International Airport. President Xi Jinping's visit was a secret to most. Governor Bill Walker only found out about it 2 weeks in advance. But the governor offered a hearty welcome, with two of his grandchildren waiting on the tarmac with bouquets. After deplaning, Xi and the Chinese delegation headed south to Beluga Point to gander at the snow-capped mountains across Turnagain Arm. The Seward Highway was closed for about 30 minutes to accommodate the visit, which came just a day after the same road was closed for 12 hours for a police manhunt and an unplanned avalanche. Then, Xi and his delegation returned to downtown Anchorage, strolling into a conference room on the bottom floor of the Hotel Captain Cook. There, Governor Walker and the President of China grinned, shook hands, and sat down to talk through an interpreter. Walker talked up the state's seafood industry, native corporations, and Alaska's position as a major air cargo hub. But the governor devoted the bulk of his public remarks to his favorite mega project, a planned natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to Nikiski.
Alaska can provide a stable source of gas supply to the Asia-Pacific region for more than a century.
President Xi's public remarks were more focused on the views.
Well, in the eyes of ours and in the eyes of many of the Chinese people, Alaska is a name that brings a lot of mystery in our mind. And it is a place where a lot of people would like to go. It's like Shangri-La to us.
The Chinese president then made a prediction.
The very fact that we have now been here, I believe, will serve as a good advertisement for your state.
Xi said he thought his visit would fuel a Chinese tourist boom in Alaska. But while the press was there for all of Governor Walker's remarks, the bulk of Xi's statement happened behind closed doors. In polite whispers, Chinese security guards ushered reporters out of the room. Neither leader took any questions. Before taking off at around 11 p.m. Friday, Xi and his delegation dined with Walker and his staff on king salmon and crab bisque. At a press conference the next morning, Walker described the meeting as very special, although the Chinese president may have been disappointed by the restaurant's stationary nature.
When we sat down at the to have dinner at the Captain Cook, we were facing the mountains, and he asked if the room would be turning around, and I said I hope it wouldn't be.
Walker said the discussion covered everything from climate change to the natural gas line to training opportunities for Chinese Winter Olympic athletes. The governor didn't announce any new initiatives, but he said he felt the visit could lead to closer ties.
If we had traveled to China, we could not have had a meeting like this. Not would be surrounded with this level of high-level ministers at that meeting. So it was really, I have to say, it was a little unprecedented.
Experts say the Chinese president's Anchorage excursion was probably more than just a chance to eat salmon with the governor.
It makes a lot of sense for them to strengthen their relationship with Alaska.
That's Nils Andreasen of the Institute of the North. He says China has a strong interest in Arctic issues, including the prospect of new shipping routes. But he says there was probably another reason for the visit.
Because Anchorage is beautiful.
Andreasen says China is keenly interested in expanding tourism opportunities here. So get ready, Alaska. President Xi was probably dead serious when he said to expect a lot more Chinese tourists headed our way. From Alaska's Energy Desk, with help from Wesley Early, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
The House Finance Committee is taking a new approach and will combine its proposals to institute an income tax and raise oil and gas taxes with a proposal to draw money from permanent fund earnings to pay for state government. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The House Committee amended Senate Bill 26, which sets how much the state can draw from permanent fund earnings. Under the amendment, changes to the permanent fund will only go into effect if the legislature also passes an income tax and changes to oil and gas taxes. Homer Republican Representative Paul Seaton says the committee made the change to avoid a lawsuit challenging a House proposal. He is the committee's co-chairman.
This shows our commitment to a full fiscal plan and not passing just a portion of it and walking away.
The House focused on the Senate bill instead of House Bill 115, which included both permanent fund changes and an income tax. Seaton says he expected that if that bill became law, it would likely have faced a lawsuit. While he thinks the state Supreme Court would uphold the law, he wanted to avoid a legal battle. Another House amendment to the Senate bill would eliminate a limit on state spending. Another change would increase the amount of permanent fund dividends. They would be $1,000 under the current Senate bill and $1,250 in the amended version. Anchorage Republican Representative Lance Pruitt objected to a provision that would require the Senate to pass the House version of the oil and gas tax bill or the entire permanent fund bill would die.
That right there scares the living daylights out of me, that you would try to say that the other body has absolutely no ability to determine whether or not they feel that that particular piece of legislation should be amended in a different manner.
The Senate passed the bill in mid-March. The House can make changes. But if the Senate doesn't agree to the changes, the two chambers could work out their differences in a conference committee. The legislation is intended to close the long-term gap between how much the state spends and how much it raises. Anchorage Democratic Representative Les Guerra says it's also important to pass the income and oil and gas taxes to spread the impact of balancing the budget.
If somebody who struggles to make ends meet is going to chip in, and I'm glad the dividend in here is larger, but those with the greatest privilege should also chip in.
The House made another key change to the Senate's version of the bill. The Senate version would lower the amount that the state draws from permanent fund earnings by a dollar for every dollar the state raises in oil royalties and taxes above a certain level. The House version increases that level and lowers the cut to the permanent fund draw to 80 cents on the dollar. That will have the effect of raising the amount available for spending if oil money grows. State Revenue Commissioner Randall Hoffbeck says the change would lead to instability as the budget goes up and down with oil prices.
It's not nearly as effective in taking volatility out of the revenue forecasts, that you will still see more volatility in budgeting.
Hoffbeck says that without new taxes or spending cuts, the state would start to deplete permanent fund earnings.
We need a full fiscal plan to take the uncertainty out of the economy so that the economy can start to grow.
The House Finance Committee was scheduled to hear public testimony on the bill tonight. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Dive teams are finally working to repair Hillcorp's leaking natural gas pipeline in Cook Inlet. The leak was discovered in early February, though regulators say it actually began in December. But repairs were delayed by winter ice conditions in the inlet, which made it too dangerous for divers to work. In recent weeks, Hillcorp shut down two other pipelines in the inlet because of suspected oil and gas leaks. But the company now says it believes an oil sheen spotted near one of its platforms did not come from a pipeline leak. In a press release today, Hillcorp says the line from its Anna platform passed a pressure test over the weekend and a dive team found no damage. The company is still investigating what might have caused the oil sheen. It's also investigating a third pipeline from its Steelhead platform. The company found indications of a potential leak from that line during an audit of its Cook Inlet infrastructure prompted by the first leak. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a recall effort underway for borough assembly members in Haines.
I think these are so far-fetched as to be laughable. I would ask that the public stop wasting taxpayers' money.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Jesse Holmes is the winner of the 2017 Kobuk 440. Holmes crossed the finish line yesterday morning at 1:51 a.m. with nine dogs in Kotzebue. Last year's champion, Nicholas Petit, took second place, arriving 32 minutes behind Holmes on Sunday morning with seven dogs. Wade Mars finished in third place in his rookie run of the Kobuk 440, followed by Jason Mackey in fourth and Richie Deal of ENIAC rounding out the top five. 15 of the 16 total teams have crossed the finish line in Kotzebue. The latest, Jesse Salyer, who arrived at 3:52 a.m. this morning with seven dogs. And this year's Red Lantern, Dempsey Woods Sr., is still on the trail. According to the GPS tracker, he's resting on the trail, an estimated 35 miles from the Selawik checkpoint. The 2017 Kobuk 440 sled dog race wraps up this evening with a finisher's banquet in Kotzebue starting at 6 p.m. The University of Alaska Board of Regents is holding a special meeting on Thursday in Fairbanks to discuss contingency plans in light of state Senate-approved budget cuts. Last week, the Senate passed a budget that cuts $22 million from the $325 million in UA funding supported by the House and Governor Bill Walker.
In the event that a number comes from the legislature that is less than that, the university needs to be prepared for those cuts.
UA spokeswoman Roberta Graham says Regents anticipated the Senate reducing the level of funding, but not by $22 million. She says UA President Jim Johnson is talking about additional budget options with campus chancellors.
What they think would be likely cuts on those campuses, and those will be the options that come forward to the Regents.
President Johnson last week called the Senate cut devastating, while noting that the UA budget has already been reduced by $53 million over the past 3 years, and that UA is in the process of downsizing but needs time to carry out a plan to reduce reliance on state funds by 2025. Graham says there's also concern about a lack of capital funding for UA, noting a $1 billion backlog in deferred maintenance. The UA Regents meeting is scheduled for Thursday afternoon from 1 to 3 at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and will be live streamed. GCI blames spotty service over the weekend across the state on intentional damage to a fiber optic cable in Midtown Anchorage. Heather Handyside is the company's spokesperson.
It appeared to be human-caused, possibly intentional, and right now we have law enforcement investigating.
But a lot remains unclear. Handyside says GCI is not disclosing the manner in which the cable was cut, why the company thinks criminal activity may be involved, or which law enforcement agency is investigating.
Because this is part of an ongoing investigation, I can't really comment on any more of the details right now.
GCI is Alaska's largest telecommunications provider, and Handyside says the outages affected thousands. Customers around the state complained of service outages beginning late Saturday. Handyside says GCI had everything working normally again by Sunday afternoon. Last week, GCI announced an outside company will buy the brand and all its equipment in Alaska for $1.2 billion. It's spring, and that means construction time. Among the massive road projects kicking off around the state is an upgrade to a section of the Seward Highway running through Anchorage. Orange detour signs are already diverting some traffic in the area, but bigger changes are coming. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove found out, the detours will last all summer.
Heavy equipment operators are busy doing prep work for detours that motorists on the Seward Highway will see for the entire summer. Chong Kim is a state engineer on the project.
The population has grown tremendously over the years, and we've used our facilities that are old and not outdated, but they're old, and the capacity has changed.
First, crews are revamping Homer and Brayton Drives, frontage roads that run parallel to the highway. When that is completed sometime in May, highway traffic will be diverted to them. By the summer of 2019, the highway will have extra lanes and feature a new bridge that will allow for better east-to-west access. That's still a long ways off for drivers, business owners, and people living in the area, but Kim says they are trying to account for those needs.
We spent a lot of time on a detour configuration. So as far as I'm concerned, an average driver will not feel the move of the diversion.
Kim says the project is on an aggressive schedule. Two crews are working nonstop, one during the day, one at night. And for now, the project is still on track. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
In Haines, a recall effort is underway for half of the borough assembly, including the two newest members. KHNS's Emily Files has more.
10 residents signed 3 requests for recall petitions. They accuse Assemblymembers Tom Morfitt, Heather Lendy, and Tresham Gregg of misconduct in office. The borough clerk, with advice from the borough attorney, will determine whether the applications warrant official recall petitions. Then the 10 residents who signed the initial requests would have to gather more than 250 signatures to send the question to a special election. Resident Don Turner Jr. is the main sponsor on the recall applications. He publicly threatened a recall petition for Assemblyman Morfitt in December, after the assembly fired former manager Bill Seward.
I blame you, Tom, for that. You don't want to try. You're one way about stuff. I am tomorrow going to start terminating your job. I'm going to get a recall petition out and see if I can't terminate your job.
But the decision to fire Seward is not mentioned in the recall requests. Turner uses a few other incidents to support the misconduct in office allegations. A few months ago, the Haines police chief decided to stop providing the full blotter to the newspaper and on Facebook. Lendy and Morfitt expressed their disagreement with that decision. Turner says this amounts to coercion of a subordinate and an effort to impact their own personal or financial interests. Morfitt is the publisher of the local newspaper, and Lendy writes obituaries for it. Turner also accuses Morfitt, Lendy, and Gregg of violating the Alaska Open Meetings Act by communicating about borough business over email. Turner declined to comment for this story. KHNS reached Morfitt shortly after he found out about the recall applications.
I think these are so far-fetched as to be laughable. I would ask that the public stop wasting taxpayers' money bringing frivolous claims such as these. I think we all have much more important business to do than this little schoolyard game.
Morfitt and Lendy were elected to the assembly about 6 months ago. They overcame 4 other candidates, including one who is a sponsor on the recall requests. Gregg was elected to the assembly in 2015, along with Margaret Friednauer. Assembly members Friednauer, Ron Jackson, and Mike Case are not targeted in the recall petition requests. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Legislation to increase the Petersburg Borough's land grant from the state passed the Senate today. The bill would transfer more than 14,000 acres to the new borough, which hopes to develop or sell some of the property. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
Senate Bill 28 was heard in the Senate Resources Committee. It and a companion bill in the House would grant 14,666 acres of state land to the borough government. As part of the process of borough formation, Petersburg is entitled to 1,439 acres under state law, but is asking for more. Resources Committee member and Anchorage Republican Senator Kevin Meyer wondered about justifying such a land grant.
I'm not so concerned about the number of acres, but the value of acres, because like you said, we're in tough times in Petersburg, but we are as a state as well. So for me to go back to my hometown of Anchorage and say, well, we just gave $68 million worth of land to the Petersburg borough, you know, we have to justify that in these times of when we're 2.8 billion in the hole.
The state's Department of Natural Resources values the full 14,666 acres that Petersburg is seeking at $5,375 an acre, or a total of more than $78 million. Taking out the entitlement that the borough already is allowed under state law, the additional land Petersburg wants is valued at more than $68 million. Under the bill, Petersburg would be granted 95% of the available state land in the borough that hasn't been designated to another use. Marty Parsons, the deputy director of the state's Division of Mining, Land and Water, said the lands sought by Petersburg are a mix of parcels close to Petersburg and further out in the borough.
There are settlement lands or lands that the state would have developed material sites on for road construction. It has some timber value to the land, so there is some muskeg involved, but it's quite a varied variety of lands. But there are some areas that have relatively high value residential subdivisions.
Petersburg officials say the increased acreage would be more on par with legislative land grants for other municipalities. 15 of the other 18 boroughs in Alaska have received land grants through the legislative process. Haines and Wrangell were the most recent in 2010. Petersburg's Community and Economic Development Director Liz Cabrera told the committee that the land could help diversify Petersburg's economy.
You know, there's some remote property. It may be suitable for development for tourism opportunity. There's also some property that could be available for resource development, specifically sand and gravel.
Other land could be sold for residential homes, increasing the property tax base for the borough. The bill's sponsor, Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman, who grew up in Petersburg, also told the committee that some of the lands had a history of use already. He pointed to Whitney Island near the mainland north of Petersburg.
Whitney Island?
Mm-hmm.
It used to have a post office. There used to be families living there 100 years ago, or even less than 100 years. And now it's all just grown over. And so some of this land, you know, has been used before. In fact, there's remnants of the old Fox Farm Railroad, that little funky railroad that went around the island to feed the minks. And when you go in there and anchor up. So it's very, very suitable land for anchorage, for boats, and potential development.
Petersburg officials are hopeful the bill could pass this session. The transfer of lands then could take years after that. So far, there's been little opposition from legislators. The city and borough of Juneau, which sued over the northern boundary of Petersburg's new borough, has supported the legislation to transfer the additional state land to Petersburg. After moving out of the Senate committee, the vote on the floor was 20 in favor of the bill in the Senate. It next moves on to the House for consideration. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The Bear Trail Lodge in King Salmon is now fully owned and operated by the couple who have run the lodge's guiding service since it opened in 1999. From KDLG in Dillingham, Avery Lill has more.
Nancy Morris Lyon and Heath Lyon are now the full owners and operators of the Bear Trail Lodge in King Salmon, or they both will be officially once Heath Lyon signs his paperwork.
Yeah, well, he hasn't signed on this paperwork yet because he was busy out fishing, but we do both own it, yes.
Morris Lyon has been guiding fishing trips in Alaska for more than 30 years, and she's become known by some as the Pink Lady on the River. In her first year of guiding, someone gave her a pink hat with the slogan, "Simply the Best," which she liked.
So I put the hat on my head. And the next thing that I hear are the rumors that nobody can catch fish in a pink hat.
Well, me being the person I am, that made me a little bit perturbed. So I was bound to prove him wrong. And I slapped that hat on my head and it became my moniker.
The pink stuck. And she came to own a pink boat. Again, the pink color was unintentional on her part.
I've kind of become the pink lady out here without actually really wanting that to have happened.
She hired Heath Lyon as a dockhand in 1991 and trained him as a guide in 1992. The rest is history, she says. They've been guiding together ever since. The Lyons ran the guide operations for the Bear Trail Lodge's original owners, Maury and Donnelly Moorcroft, when they built the lodge in 1999. 8 years ago, when the Moorcrofts sold the lodge, the Lyons became partners with Brian Kraft and David Sandlin. As they've grown into running the lodge, Morris Lyon says she's picked up more than just that pink fishing cap.
You have to wear all kinds of hats. You forget counting them because it doesn't even make sense anymore.
They handle everything from the airline reservations and fish processing to the food and the gear.
We do it all. It's a pretty homegrown operation. But, you know, we've kind of streamlined it over the years, and I've done it for so many years now, you kind of forget how much it takes to actually go into it. And if I think about it too much, it makes me tired, so I just do it.
For their services, they charge anywhere from $5,275 for 3 days and three nights at the lodge to $9,250 for 7 days and seven nights. About 250 to 300 guests per year come from all over the world for the wide array of fishing opportunities.
We do everything. Everything, I guess I should say, it's easier to say what we don't do, and that would be the saltwater. So we'll fish for everything from all five species of salmon to the trophy rainbow trout in the area, the grayling, the char and Dolly Varden, and even some pike and offshoot breeds like that.
The Lyons made it official and bought their partners out. Morris Lyon says the opportunity for them to buy the lodge was an unexpected one.
We just had this really unique opportunity that we never imagined would happen at all in our lifetime. We had two partners in the lodge, and they had much larger financial means than we did. And we had the opportunity to buy them out. And there was a financier from back east, actually, of all places, that was looking for investments in Alaska. And we just ended up being in the right place at the right time. And so we are now full owners of Bear Trail Lodge.
The day-to-day operations will remain largely unchanged, Morris Lyon anticipates. What she is excited for is to bring the lodge back into local ownership.
One of the reasons that I really am proud to own the lodge is it was built and it begun by somebody who lived out here and was a resident out here. And a lot of the inside workings of the lodge, literally the timbers and whatnot, the beams that it's built with, have come from old canneries from around here. I kind of like feel like it's being brought back to the bay again, and it's back in local hands again.
The Lyons call Bristol Bay home, and have for a long time. It's that love of place and their investment, not just of money, but of time and of heart, that keep them there.
Really, I feel like I'm the fortunate one to be a part of this little piece of earth, and I find it to be heaven on earth.
In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh, Rachel Waldholtz, and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Margaret DeMarbaris in Nome, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Emily Files in Haines, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.